Something strange and magical happened when I saw Anna Kryztyk perform at the Traverse Theater. She made time stop. Then she made time speed up again. In a seemingly effortless series of repeated movements, she made the audience acutely aware of the seconds passing into minutes. Her piece, No End, is an exploration of time continuing, time ticking, and it involved her subtly moving across the stage the slow way in which the moon moves across the sky. In this podcast, we're going to talk about that very special piece of choreography with the artist herself. But first, we're going to think about magic of a different kind with a short story from the prize-winning writer, Kirsty Logan.
Hello, everybody.
It's the multicolored cultural laser. We travel the world for the boys and the girls. Casting pots of wonder and amazement.
This story is called The Elephant Dance, and it's by me, Kirsty Logan. I wouldn't exactly call it running away. The circus came, and I was in the village. The circus left, and I wasn't in the village. Who could resist the sawdust and the tightrope and the endless strings of glinting lights? Who could resist the strongman's waxed moustache and the acrobat's elastic limbs? Who could resist elephants? I didn't even bother with a suitcase. I got all I expected. Shimmer, sparkle, sleight of hand, and yes, elephants. But I got a lot of shit too. Circus life isn't as glamorous as you'd think from storybooks and playbills, but there are good reasons to choose this life. No, that's not right. There's only one reason. We've all done wrong. Maybe you can't escape from that, but constant movement makes it feel like you can. The circus gains and loses someone in each new town. One person joins, needing to escape. Another person leaves, tired of running. It might be enough for some to whitewash their sins, to hide them away like nothing ever happened. But not me. You'll never be shiny new again, so why pretend? I want my sins glittered, tightrope balanced, wrapped in gum pink marabou. I want them lit up, bright enough to dazzle heaven. No one up there could miss me, somersaulting and shimmy shaking on the back of my elephant. Like I say, you can't go back to how you used to be. Might as well shrug on that sinner's mantle and rock it for all you're worth. I've been gone for a while now, but I do remember home. It's hard to see clear, with glitter catching in every blink. But home. The pewter sky, the seals singing, the gorse smelling of coconut. There's magic everywhere if you look for it. I didn't look, so I didn't teach my girl to look. After a while, it seemed that there was no magic left in the world. And what's the point of living in a world without magic? That's how the stink seeps in, when you forget to chase it out. It takes daily work noticing magic. The mind likes to slip into mediocrity, and from there, it's not far to misery. That's where my girl went. She chose her way out, and I wasn't watching, so it was too late for me to pull her back out. But that was a long time ago, lifetimes ago. Now I have a new life, and it's glitz and fanfare and elephants. You have to be very careful on those broad, dusty backs. You have to look. You have to see. Slip for just a moment, and the last thing you'll know is the underside of an elephant's foot. Listen. When I said that we've all done something wrong, that sparked something in you, didn't it? A match flare, a kicking up of dust. You know it's true, because you've done wrong too. I'm here to tell you that there is a way out. No, that's not right. There are two ways. One was my girl's, the other is mine. Whoever you've hurt, whoever you've lost, whatever hateful or hated things you've done, it's not too late. So you make sure to watch carefully. Light candles along your mantle. Imagine tusks and trunks in your garden. Raise up on your tiptoes to see the shimmer of lights on the horizon. Look out for us. Try to see the magic. Or the circus will come and you'll be there. Then the circus will leave and you'll be gone.
Kirsty Logan, everybody. Her debut collection of short stories is called The Rental Heart and Other Fairy Tales. It will be available from Salt, and it launches next month in Glasgow on the 23rd of March at Waterstones. Get yourself a copy. It'll be available at fine bookstores everywhere, and I highly recommend it. She's a great writer. And now, it's a pleasure to share this conversation I had with the choreographer and performer, Anna Christic. She's based in Glasgow, and she's a core member of the Helsinki-based company, Oblivia. It was a real pleasure to get a chance to sit down and talk to her, and I'm really glad to be sharing this conversation with you. Here she is, Anna Christic.
My name's Anna Christic, and I'm a performer and choreographer based here in Glasgow. No End is the fifth piece in a series of works based on the premise of waiting. I started exploring ideas on waiting 10 years ago, and the first piece in that series was Test. Test, as the title suggests, was exactly that for me, to test ideas of time and space and movement within time and space. And then throughout, as I started to develop the idea, I started to think about other things that were kind of involved in that, presence and absence, ideas of seduction, to use time to seduce. If you're seduced by something, it's that you want to be doing what that thing is. And I kind of somehow started to incorporate those thoughts into the doing of my action. And I started exploring doing and not doing and seduction in relation to time. So it's still kind of linked back to the waiting. And No End is the fifth and final, and I kind of incorporated aspects of the previous four works into No End, but I also stripped it as far back as I could. There are different levels of movement going on. There's movement of sound, of course. There's movement of thought with the questions, and then there's a very basic movement of shifting the weight, which is the essence of all movement, also connects to a more traditional vocabulary of movement, with the turned out legs and then these big kicks. And then on top of that come elements of jazz, which is a completely different dance form. The whole piece for 1 hour was essentially a preparation, performing movement that you would normally see in a rehearsal studio and not necessarily on stage.
See, I didn't realize that, but I now that you say it, that totally makes sense, because like it starts out with you just sort of having your leg up on a table, kind of stretching, kind of imperceptible shifts as you move very gradually, kind of in an arc across the stage, kind of almost repeating the same things, but adding little, I guess, flourishes. Maybe I don't have the technical, but yeah. Like at one point, as you were saying, jazz hands mm-hmm. show up, which was very fun.
Absolutely.
Are jazz hands always funny?
I think they are. And they were for me. I was, I wanted to, with No End as well, I really wanted to explore a piece that was one section that was not divided. Usually, if you're making a work and you're composing a work, usually time is sectioned so that you have some kind of progression, or then it kind of regresses, like you have this up. But I wanted to try, and it was a risk for me, because I wasn't sure if it could work.
Right, yes, like, so it's just one fluid thing that kind of speaks to, I guess in my mind it was speaking to the notion of, you know, both the cyclical nature of time and the meditative nature of it, and the way we very slowly evolve and change rather than having a big shift like where a scene would shift, right?
Yes, absolutely. And that's what I wanted to try and work with in this piece. All the previous pieces were sectioned. They'd be like time would be broken down, you know, exploring the minute in 5 minute sections, or breaking down into 20 minute sections, and there was a shift and something else happens, it shifts into another phase of that goings on. And I, for no end, I really wanted to try and make this fluid one whole section with no break. Of course, there are breaks. There are breaks in the sound. The sound changes every minute, but actually we extended the minute to 66.6 seconds. And that was to do with my progressive leg kicks, or battement, as you would say in dance terms, but lifting of the legs. The maximum I was doing at any one given time was 21 leg lifts. So we kind of measured to accommodate 21. There was something about the extending the minute. it's very complicated. No,
that's quite a nice metaphor, though, right? Like this idea that you've extended the minute, because it does feel very expansive in a very limited kind of way, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. And I think that's why, you know, you excellently brought in some video work, and that to me seems to talk, again, to speak to this notion of like imperceivable shifts.
If I could backtrack a little bit to the piece before No End, Face On, where my activity as a live performer was broken down into 20-minute sections, but the videos in that piece, there were two videos mirroring each other in that piece, are one-hour takes. And so I wanted, in a way, in No End, to kind of reverse that, so that I would, as the live performer, would do this continuous hour or this continuous take of activity. And then we worked with the video that they would change, like they'll be highly edited. I see it quite like a screen testing, you know, that you're continuously having to repeat something and then to have it done like in different, you know. So again, it's this kind of like preparation.
You said you were worried that you were taking a risk with this piece because you didn't know if it would work. How hard is it to say, okay, I'm going to follow my instinct and not worry about what an audience is going to think? How aware of a potential audience are you as you're working on it? I know it takes a long time for you to make a piece. So I'm wondering, at what point does the audience enter your process? How, or maybe to phrase it a different way, for how long can you keep the idea of an audience away?
Throughout the process, I invite people into the studio, and I see how it fits. And I don't start a work by thinking necessarily this piece is for a certain demographic. The work, you know, it premieres and then it gets performed a couple of times, and then it really starts to evolve. I think after premiering a piece, that's when the real work begins.
I'm wondering, like, in terms of like making your own work, actually, maybe you can just talk a little bit about kind of your background. I know you've studied with Merce Cunningham. You said your work is different but that your work kind of stems from the same ideas. And I'm wondering if you could explain that a little bit more for both people who don't know your work and maybe from regarding Merce's work.
I don't use narrative as such, like blatantly. And Merce never did at all. It was purely the body moving through space. And his work with his composers, you didn't dance to music. You didn't use movement to illustrate a piece of music. So music, the sound for a piece and the movement for a piece are essentially their own entity. They just share the same space and time. And that still excites me. You know, and I don't think I will ever create a dance to a piece of music or to illustrate a piece of music or to use that to create a sense of emotion.
It's not the sound, the cello to mourn times
Absolutely,
passing.
Absolutely, yes. It's, yeah, all the words of a song that's, you know, that's kind of pulling it along in a particular way, whether it's sad or happy. And I think that's the beauty of working with Tom and this electroacoustic sound world. There's a lot going on in those sounds. So sounds of hard drive, sounds of your mobile phone there. And they have an incredible rhythm that one could never compose. It's completely wild listening to those rhythms, allowing the sound to do its thing, which then allows me to do my thing. And I think that comes from, that's something that I took a lot from Merce, that, you know, that movement doesn't have to illustrate sound, that it can coexist.
When did you find the freedom in yourself to kind of be like, okay, I don't actually have to behave, there's another way to do dance that isn't this formal style.
In all my work, I use technical vocabulary. I just pare it back completely. That's important to me because I'd like to get as close as I can to the essence of movement. And sometimes it's more elaborate. and in Face On and Figure This and the previous, they are more elaborate. I'm interested in working with ideas, and I try to embody those ideas. Yeah, I'm not looking to be a character. I'm also not looking to present autobiography. The works are not about Anna. They're not about me. It's Anna acting as a conduit for an idea to kind of be shared. And, you know, like I've eliminated turning, like pirouettes. I don't do them anymore. No. To me, they're flurries of decoration. And they might feel nice and look nice for a brief moment, but actually they're just decoration. So things like things in dance for me are not interesting anymore. So I try to kind of say, okay, well, if that's not interesting anymore, where do I go from there?
I mean, but you would maybe use a pirouette if the piece required decorative flurries, right? Like if that was the rumination, if that was the piece you wanted to do, then that would be a tool that you could use. And that's what I kind of was getting the sense of as I was watching. It was like you're using some of these formalized moves as a way of illustrating a theme. And I'm wondering kind of how you start kind of creating a piece. And maybe more specifically, when did you realize that, like, the idea from that comes from the sky, whether it's about time or a feeling about love or minimalism or whatever it might be, when did you decide that your outlet for thought and for expressing thought on those themes came through your own physicality and your own body?
It came quite quickly for the last three of the pieces, including No End. I'm moving all the time. I never stop. So my legs are going all the time. And the idea is not to show effort. Of course, there is effort. And by the time I've passed by into, you know, 55 minutes, you know, I'm quite tired. But then also to have a space that the bottom half of the body can keep going. And then the arms can engage in this, you know, other world of jazz and a different form to the classical thing that's going on with the legs.
Did you always feel that you could express yourself best through using your body as opposed to speaking or drawing a picture, taking a photograph? I mean, maybe that's a really reductive question to ask a dancer, but I was just wondering kind of when did that click that, like, oh, I've got this feeling and I can use these extremities?
It was a very slow process. I was introduced to dance, and I went to see it for a number of years before deciding that I wanted to have a go, which is also quite the other way around. Usually during childhood or what have you, some dancers start in childhood, and they go to a class or what have you, and then they follow it through, and then they may see a piece of dance and so on. But I didn't start dancing until I was 19, so I had quite a long time to kind of think, well, you know, can I do this? I was interested in it, but it was a bit of, yeah, it was a slog because I was already old, I was already, uncoordinated and and stiff and with
bitter
lots of bad habits. You know, which are kind of like not, the, you know, that has to be then turned around. And at that age, it's possible, of course, you can turn it around. You can turn it around at any age. But, you know, it's a slow process. I was also very interested in performing because I'm so shy in like my disposition and in life. So it's very interesting, this idea of like performing. And I was of course told that I could never perform because I'm so shy in the training, in the classes, you know, like I wasn't the one who was always at the front showing the teacher how good I was. You know, I was usually in the back, you know, just diligently doing my thing and nobody really noticed me or what have you. And then and then they put me on the stage and then they didn't they thought I was somebody else completely. So I thought, okay, what's that all about? what he's performing, you know, and I enjoy performing. I enjoy showing you as an audience. I enjoy showing you the thing that I'm doing. However minimal or supposedly difficult it is, I enjoy engaging that I can share something with an audience. So in that respect, I can work with these far out ideas and still manage, because of the ability to perform, to pull people towards the work in some way. You know, so there is a kind of like human face to the abstract exploration, you know, experimentation on time, space, and what have you. You know, that there is something that's kind of grounded in the human condition.
Well, it is, well, I guess that's because you were watching a person, right? Like, that's the difference between watching a machine and watching a person. This is a real live person in front of you creating these movements and getting these things out. And I guess, yeah, I mean, I think it's a really important thing to recognize that there is somebody there doing it, and that these motions that seem very effortless do require a huge amount of effort. But then also this thought process also requires a lot of effort. And how best do you show and illustrate using, you know, basically, you know, your limbs and your body, these kind of complicated thoughts that you've got about time and space and these things, these big ideas, and you do you feel like you've always been able to do that, or is that something that's grown with you as you've evolved as an artist, this ability to sort of tackle bigger things, so, you know, and move in a more non-linear, non-narrative way? Because I think that requires a certain amount of confidence, and I wonder where that maybe, how you developed that confidence to be like, okay, no, these are hard ideas, but actually I can do this with just, you know, me. And I know you work as like in a company and stuff, right? And that's got to be much different as an artist working as, you know, a dancer within a company, as opposed to presenting something which is very much of your own head and then of your own body.
I'm learning all the time. It's a funny contradiction. Sort of shy, quiet person, and then this kind of like, as you say, confidence to say, well, yeah, I'm going to tackle these things, and you know, I may know nothing, but I'm going to have a go. You know, and do, and it is a, but it's also like these ideas excite me. So I get excited by them, and I think that draws me along. Have I cracked it? I mean, who knows? I'll spend the rest of my life finding out. I feel like I've finished this series with no end. I think it's a fitting end to the to the series. But as far as when I go forward into the next, which I don't know what that is yet, I'm having a good think about what that thing, but what that could be, what that thing could be. But I think somehow it's still going to be in the same vein. It's still going to be pulling on those things that excite me, and it's not about decoration. I have to keep forging that, keep going with it. And of course, you know, it will have its difference, and it will be, as I say, some pieces are not as pared back. So maybe maybe the next thing I do is not as pared back as No End, but there's something about that kind of way of doing things that I think will remain.